night between 6 and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Studio B, it's the Jonathan Wright Show. Find it right here at revolution.radio.
The Secret Kindergarten is here for the young children of the world. The best program on the radio for kids. Dealing with the most important topics in the whole universe. Fairy tales, music and movement, numbers, plants, animals, fun, colors, insects. Take care and cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out, up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about feelings. Just remember the magic word. The magic word is no. Step on into the Secret Kindergarten. Saturdays, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Revolution Radio.
Anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
more... Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
Just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
What?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. All right, thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
In a world, what up, though, fam? All right, so we had technical difficulties last night. Wasn't supposed to be, but here we are. I'll try to make sure the audio stays pretty good. I've had some people complain about that, but yeah, so we're going to cover the quote-unquote debate on InfoWars. I did a quote-unquote part one, but it was really just playing the intros and then kind of explaining to people my approach. People still are like in the chat right then, you know, no offense, but that was terrible. You could have done better and all this stuff. And you know, respectfully, I don't care about that opinion. I'm open to feedback and critique always, right? But I talked to many people that know me a lot beforehand. I told everyone that's what I was going to do. I let people know I was going to wear kid gloves. I was going to optimize amicability, meaning keeping it amicable, of course, to ensure future appearance, or at least optimize the chance of future appearance with an actual moderator. I knew there were commercial breaks. I knew he was hosting the show. I knew he would be in control of how the show went. I knew if I became very assertive and named fallacies and really just went all out, that it, normally people get triggered. I didn't want him to dig his heels in too hard publicly. I didn't want to have the other Globe Earthers get in emotionally invested and get triggered and dig their heels in. I basically took one for the team. That's what I did, where I answered all the questions in good faith, even though I didn't have to. They were all divergent and stuff. We're going to get into it. But yeah, and honestly, people should send him this review. We'll cover a lot of the stuff. I still tip my hat to him, just like I told him afterwards, for having the conversation, for pointing out the obvious elephant in the room, which is that there's a huge crossover in audiences, that everyone that typically debates me or other flat earthers are super arrogant and Bill Nye wannabes and super condescending, and that flat earthers aren't stupid and for just having the conversation, right? I think in a way he kind of got trapped into it, but he went through with it. I tip my hat to him. I don't have beef with him. So yeah, there's that. We're going to get into all the specifics, but I kind of covered that part of it in the first one, so you can check that out. That wasn't a debate. There wasn't a moderator. And I've been through too many of these where I see the coolest people. It pulls the worst out in the coolest people, bro, especially publicly. And since there was no moderator, it automatically couldn't have been a debate. So my intention was to just pique the curiosity of people that have put it off, to dispel the notion that we're uninformed or we're stupid, and to just kind of show, create this new vibe where it doesn't have to be like this all-out toxic battle. And it seems like a lot of quote-unquote flat earthers have become desensitized to that, and there are certain people in the community they watch that act like that. And I think that the new wave needs to move past that. I feel like I had intuitive confirmation that this was going to be a huge year before any of this happened. I told everyone that listens to me or keeps up with me on X or in Discord that, and I think I have a responsibility to act a certain way, to carry myself a certain way, and to not prioritize ego, etc. So some people said they really liked how I did, some people said they didn't, some people have seen me just like be super lethal with the logic and just exposing everything, and I get that's what people were longing for, but I want to save that for an actual moderated debate where he has more time to prepare, we have specific talking points, etc. Even in that debate, we're going to cover it clearly. What was happening was my point was kind of being dismissed, and then we were being led into commercial break. What can you do? It is what it is. So we're going to just cover the debate, and we'll get into the specifics. If you're new here, welcome. I think that this is very important to kind of share out there once we go through this, because a lot of people after watching that are going to have questions if they're intellectually honest. They're going to be like, wait, what was he saying? Is that true? Harrison was just saying, nah. If you watch it like needing Flat Earth to be wrong and you have this huge bias, you're not ready for the conversation anyway. If you're a truther and you know truth doesn't fear investigation, then you're going to go look into the information further. So there's kind of the meta, and we're just going to jump right into it, because it'll probably end up still taking a while. We're going to skip the intros. We covered the intros earlier. He kind of just gave his general idea and sentiment about the conversation, and I, out of respect and good faith, did the same thing. I could have used that 10 minutes to just been like, da-da-da-da-da, and maybe, if I will concede anything, maybe I should have done that, but I wanted to break through the cognizance and show people the PSYOP narrative is coping, all these other talking points is coping, you know. It really comes down to falsifications independent of replacement. I gave the adoption analogy. I wanted people to be in a receptive mindset when we continue the conversation. So you may disagree with how I did it, but I will say I put a lot of thought into how I did it. Not one thing I did was like not tactically approached. And, you know, I mean, whatever, right? I mean, obviously there's going to be Monday morning quarterbacks, there's going to be the people that are much more toxic and aggressive with their approach, saying they should have been up there or whatever. I don't care about any of that. So let's get into the debate. And I will reiterate this point. Keep this in mind, right? Falsification is independent of replacement. If I found a file in my parents' closet that says that, it turns out I was adopted my whole life. I thought they were my real parents. They told me they were my real parents. I had no reason to question that. Everyone in my town and in my church and in my school all assumed they were my real parents, acted like they were my real parents. I didn't know anything about it. If I came up to you and said, dude, you'll never believe what I just found out. My whole life is a lie. I'm actually adopted. And then you said, wait, what are you talking about? You can't be adopted. Everyone knows those are your parents. I mean, do you think that everyone at your church and your school and the town meetings, you think everyone's in on the lie? I would say, no, obviously not. They also believe the lie. They believe those are my parents. Why wouldn't they? And then you said, well, who are your real parents? Then I said, I don't know. I want to find out. Trust me. That's the next step. I just know that they're not my parents, you know. I haven't figured out who my real parents are. And then you respond by saying, well, I'm not going to believe that those are not your real parents until you can tell me who your real parents are. I would just think that you were being ridiculous and illogical and didn't know how basic logic worked, because falsification of the fact that they were supposedly my parents is independent of me replacing it with who my parents actually are. So I think that's very important. I said, I even said this in the opener. I said, it's crazy that people watched it and claimed I lost or whatever. It wasn't even a real debate, but if you really listen to what I said, right, in the opener, I said what typically happens, and I tried to be as good faith as possible. This is important for me to reiterate this before we start. I said, what normally happens, and I understand because most people have a similar response. When you first hear it, you just want to know how everything would work. So you're like, well, how would this work if the Earth's flat? Well, what about this? What about that? How would that work? What's the moon? Blah, blah, blah. And that's very illogical. And if you are presented with this understanding and continue to do that, you're being intellectually dishonest. And whether that be with me or whoever you're talking or just yourself, that's sad. That's a sad state of mind. So that's what the conversation was. That's what it always is. And there's this gross double standard in the conversation. And we'll get into it. But if a flat earther doesn't know one answer, right, then somehow the Earth becomes a globe again. But when the globe Earth, with billions of dollars of funding, thousands of universities, hundreds and hundreds of years, the world's governments, etc., the whole population believing it, still can't answer basic, fundamental, foundational questions or aspects and have no answers for their model, that's just science. That's how it works, you stupid flurf. We learn things as we go. But when a flat earther doesn't know a question, as a group that's basically going against the grain and being super censored and suppressed and attacked and misrepresented and, you know, divided, if we haven't answered every question there is, way more than this other side, somehow it becomes true again. That's why it's important to understand falsification is independent of replacement. Falsification is independent of replacement. Very simple 5-word phrase. Okay. So we're going to get back into it. And in the opener, I said it comes down to two primary points, and that is curvature and motion. Is the surface of the Earth curving at a rate consistent with a sphere with a radius value that they claim of 3,959 miles? I'll try not to go too fast. And is the Earth actually rotating? That's something else I try not to do. If you're new to this channel, you'll find out that I kind of get into like a flow, and I'll go kind of quickly. I'll start using some technical terms you may not be familiar with. I will try to always double back and explain them if I can tell I'm getting a bit technical, and I try to monitor how fast I go, but it just is what it is. I tried to be really slow in that debate as well. So, and this is what's so funny about it, is I was wearing kid gloves, meaning that I was not getting super technical. I wasn't just slicing him up with all the specific technical terms and scientific aspects. And I wasn't, that's just a fact. I was literally saying, I don't want to get too technical. And you can listen to me and know, if you've watched any of my stuff, that I was doing that. This idea that I just got destroyed and all that stuff is just major cope, but it's all good. So we're going to get into it, and I'll actually pull it up this time instead of continually saying that. So I'll bounce back and forth from me being on the screen, me not being on the screen. You guys can tell me what you like more. Slower cadence is helping with comprehension. Yeah, but some people say that they don't like it. There is no way to appease everyone. I learned that a long time ago. That's why I'm really not fazed by conflicting feedback. You know, some people are like, why did you go so easy? Some are like, I'm so glad you slowed it down, trying to make sure you were digestible for the audience. A lot of people saw what I was doing. A lot of people want to hate no matter what, so it's all good. I guess if I don't just scream about celestial navigation over and over, then I must not be as good as other people or something. And we all have our own approaches. Okay. Let's pop in. And, of course, you can donate to the stream at ko-fi.com/witsit. If some of the mods can actually put, type a message that says donate to the stream, you know, here, I'll pin the chat. It's also in the description. You can also go to witsitgetsit.com, and it's on there as well. All right. I have an embed donate on witsitgetsit.com, so you can just donate directly through there if you would like. Cool. Let's get into it. Let's just start with this.
I lost my paper that says it, but that's right, right? Well, yeah, yes. At Witsit gets it. Okay. Open discussion time. Obviously, we both brought a bunch of stuff in our opening statements. I guess to me, again, every debate I've watched from Flat Earth, sort of has the same paradigm, the same dynamic. It's somebody like yourself that's arguing for flat Earth, and then there's like the Bill Nye the Science Guy, Neil deGrasse Tyson wannabe. And frankly, I don't really care about the scientific arguments as much when it comes to whether experiments are valid or whether the physics checks out. I really do just go down to like basic observation and logic and what would be necessary.
You don't care about the science or the technical aspects of the conversation? Well, I mean, I took that as a white flag, okay? I'm just being honest. I was trying to be considerate.
Necessary to cover this sort of thing up, and we can get into the PSYOP aspect in just a little bit. But like the moon is a sphere, right? Can we agree on that? Because, I mean, to me, it's pretty undeniable. The moon is, in fact, a sphere that we can all see. Do you agree with that?
Okay, so I'm actually going to go ahead and pull something up. For you guys regarding this specific question. And if you heard my answer, well, actually, let's just play it.
Well, I've never seen the other side of the moon, but I would agree that it looks somewhat spherical, sure.
Okay.
But, you know, I've replicated a moon, like, with a polarization where it looks like a sphere. And you can walk over there and put your hand right through it, right? It's a projection. Just with the electromagnetic polarization in the Atmos, you could have I don't know what the moon is, but I would agree. Yeah, it does. It's certainly round and looks like it could be a sphere. I've never seen the other side of it before, so I can't say I know it's a sphere, right? Coincidentally, we only see the one side.
But the shadows on the moon certainly make it look like a sphere, right? I mean, unless you have enough.
The shadows actually don't always line up. Now, what we're going to show right fast is this observation. Or demonstration, pretty interesting. So check this out, and this also addresses libration. If you know what libration is, if you video the moon for periods of time, you'll actually see it look like it's kind of wobbling back and forth in a way. Check this out. The simple fact that something can appear to be spherical and it doesn't have to actually be spherical. I also gave an example of something I've replicated myself where I've created a holographic projection of the moon just using nothing fancy, just like people hear holograph and they freak out. It's like, okay, you believe that the sun's not really there when we see it set. If you believe the mainstream model, you believe that we see mountains from hundreds of miles away, but they're not actually there. Basically everything that we see is an illusion. But someone says the word hologram and people just start ridiculing. If you understood electromagnetic polarization, you just get a little polarized dish and you can project what appears to be a spherical moon. We replicated the craters. We replicated what people call shadows. We replicated the phases. We replicated the color changes. And you can walk right over to it and put your hand through it. You would have swore it was a sphere. What was very interesting about that was as I changed angle, I even have a video of it on my phone somewhere. As I changed the angle, I didn't start seeing other parts of the moon. It just followed me around. And that's very interesting. It does look like the moon that we observe is in an apparent position similar to the sun. And again, that is the case for either situation, which we cover. So anyway, just to address that, and now obviously let me say the obvious, this isn't some type of gotcha. Like people are like, yeah, you didn't win the debate. You still can't even tell us what the moon is. That's what someone said in the chat. Like, how is that some type of gotcha? Your side doesn't even agree what the moon is today. They just changed what they claim the moon is made of like a few months ago. They claim they still don't even know what all it's made of. They don't know if there's water there, blah, blah, blah. They claim that 85% of the moon rocks they found on the Earth. Like, oh, you found a rock on the Earth and then you swore that's what the moon was made of, even though it actually looks different than what we see when we look at the moon. It's totally legit. But again, I think it... I personally think, based on what I've seen, that it has plasma characteristics, it's in an apparent position, and that it does have a relationship with the sun, seemingly charging up or something to that effect, where it charges up to the 14 days, and then it starts to discharge for the remaining days. That's what the observations and evidence suggest to me. And it seems to be in a fluid medium, as for lunar and celestial waves. So let's keep going. Although none of that matters. Like, I don't have to know what the moon is to be able to do basic geometry of the Earth. And what you'll find is all the globe earthers want to avoid that like the plague, avoid the radius value, and just ask, get like stump a flat earther with a question that they don't know. How could I know what the moon is? According to the official story, people didn't know for sure what the moon was until they allegedly went and landed on it. There were physicists and scientists saying they thought it was plasma in the 60s. Right? But like, oh, no, since you believe NASA claimed they went there, you know what it is now. It's super weird kind of coping mechanism, but let's not take forever on each point.
Another explanation for why the shadow moves the way it does across the moon. I mean, it basically has to be a sphere, right? I mean, are you saying the moon is a projection, or do you think it's a physical object?
I don't know what the moon is. I'm just saying I'm not, like, a lot of evidence to suggest that it's not particularly solid, actually. Like, there are even the Astronomical Society said that they've seen stars through the moon.
That's a fact. The Royal Astronomical Society reported observing stars through the moon multiple times. That's just a fact. Could it be wrong? Sure. Was I there? No. But in the late 1800s, the Royal Astronomical Society officially published the claim that stars were observed through the moon multiple times. There are videos that claim to do it, and what do the globe earthers say? Even though it's like, for example, the transit of Venus, it's like right where the transit of Venus would have been. You can see it in that portion of the moon. They say, oh, it's dead pixels. Right, and then we go back and forth on whether or not that's true. They can just say dead pixels, I promise, and it is, and it doesn't even look like a dead pixel. It moves around. Dead pixels don't move around as you move around with your camera, right? It's a certain portion of the frame. It doesn't stay on the moon in a specific spot, and they claim it's dead pixels. These are modern observations. So I didn't just make that up, right? I mean, obviously I know it's not consistent with what people want to believe the moon is, so they can try to ridicule, but I will just let you know. Ridicule doesn't work. We found that out with the pandemic. You tried to ridicule everyone as science deniers, and how did that work out? So,
there are things called lunar waves. The Terminator line, sometimes there will be things lit up on the other side of the Terminator line, right, which shouldn't be happening if it is a solid sphere with the actual shadow. I don't even...
And why is that ignored? We've seen things that are seemingly illuminated on the other side of the Terminator line. So... we'll just ignore that. That's inconvenient.
Claim to know that is quote unquote a shadow. We can replicate that with polarized lenses. It can just literally be like a plasma polarized lens, and it could be solid for all I know and just be optically displaced within a medium. Both models, I think, is when you start hearing the stuff you've never heard, it sounds like I'm just reaching, making stuff up. But no, but both models claim that the sun and the moon aren't actually where we see them, right? That they're apparent.
And how would this be the where we start off anyway? But this is where people would say you should have immediately said what's in the sky doesn't matter, let's stick to the ground. I get it, that's true, but I was just trying to be super good faith, and it's all good. You know, I'm gonna show that flat earthers are actually extremely researched on every subject regarding this conversation, while the other side just has to ask questions like, can we agree the moon's a sphere? Ha 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 ha, you're stupid.
Different positions. So that's interesting to know. It could be a solid sphere and just not where we see it. It could be relative to each observer based on their angle to it. So, but this is what I will say, that is actually kind of a meme. Normally people do want to, like, what's the moon? I don't know, man. I just know that the Earth is not what they said. You know, can I ask you a question? Like, you said you're just kind of into observation, right? That's what made me a flat earther, bro. Because I did not want to be a flat earther. Okay, let's just get that out. Like, it discredited everything I ever said, right? I'm like the conspiracy theorist of my family. So, like, all of a sudden, I'm going to come around saying the most ridiculous thing ever. I'm immediately discredited. So right. I went out and looked, though, bro. You can see mountains from 300 miles away. They should be 2-3 miles below Earth curvature, and you can see them.
Well, we'll talk about curvature here in just a second. But, it, you know, again, it seems to me... like you
and that's can. Obviously me pointing out that obviously we have to go to the surface of the Earth and see if it's curving instead of just looking at the sky and saying, oh man, I swear that this looks like Austin, you're wearing an orange hoodie, so you must be a Freemason. That's hilarious. Anyway, so that was my respectful, polite way of trying to point out that obviously this is technically a red herring from the primary subject.
You can see the moon, and it's pretty clear what it is. It's a rocky body. It's solid. You can see the craters. I mean, powerful telescopes or even, you know, powerful cameras can zoom in quite a bit, and it's not a projection. It seems fairly solid to me. So, you know, to me,
these are just all baseless assertions. We know it's this. That's just a baseless assertion. I just showed you a flat piece of paper looking like a sphere. I just explained we replicated all of that with a polarized lens. You can walk up, put your hand through it. I'll also point out it could literally be a solid sphere that's optically displaced within a medium, and then we see the apparent position. It could also be plasma. So, I mean, like, I don't know. This is just baseless assertions.
This is, you know, obviously just because the moon is a sphere doesn't mean the Earth is a sphere. And I know the argument that I've heard quite a bit is like, just because pool balls are circular doesn't mean the pool table is circular. Yeah, that's true. Just because the moon is a sphere does not mean that the Earth.
Which he just refuted what Alex Jones comes in and says. It's this big gotcha.
Earth is a sphere, but it might kind of be like a hint, right? It might kind of be a clue. And it sort of means that if you use terms that I've heard where it's like this
appeal to possibility, it might kind of be a hint. It might kind of be a clue. You know, no, it's non sequitur.
Cartoon Earth of, you know, some idea of a orb suspended in nothing. It's like, well, that's not actually that ridiculous because we literally see one every day. I think the shadows obviously show that it's a sphere. And then you have things like the eclipse. And, you know, you brought up the fact that the sun.
See, that's his best argument, is that, like, could you just, like, the Earth is just a sphere hanging in nothing or an orb and nothing. That's not that ridiculous. You see one every day. Touche. We do see what looks like an orb or a circle or even some would say a sphere that moves around. It's clearly suspended somehow, right, in the air. Sure, right. But that's not – the thing is that we can detect that the moon is moving, and we've used highly precise interferometry on the Earth. It's not, right? That's the difference. So as opposed to speculation, let's go to empirical measurement.
Is 400 times the size of the moon, but 400 times away. So it's, you know, a perfect match. And yeah, I mean, that whether the sun is 400 times.
Lore Lodge is really confident you're going to take it easy on him. I don't know the format, but I'm going to always try to be polite and respectful if there's no moderator, because I don't want it to turn into chaos. But let's just say in these coming debates, you know, you're going to see the debate Austin. This wasn't a debate. You know, let's be real. It was basically an interview that peppered Flat Earther with questions or whatever, and I don't care. I'll take it on.
Times or 200 times.
Also, Harrison was pretty respectful leading up to this, and if Lore Lodge is talking reckless or whatever and trying to amp it up, then obviously, you know, it is what it is. I reciprocate energy.
Times, whatever the actual multiplication is, the fact is that with solar eclipses, you can see that the moon is clearly in front of the sun, and yet they're the same size. So whatever that...
During eclipses, you can see that the moon is clearly in front of the sun, except you can't see the moon leading up to it or leaving it, and you can't see the moon ever during the entire eclipse, but you can clearly see that the moon's in front of the sun. And it could be. It could be, but we don't actually see that. We don't clearly see that.
You know, calculus is, it is, the distance is equal to the size difference. You know what I'm saying? So obviously the sun is behind the moon. The moon is an object that is apparently equivalent in size of the sun because of our distance from it and the perspective of it. And again, that sort of, I mean,
these are all baseless assertion fallacies.
If you accept that, if you accept that the moon is a sphere that's above the Earth, everything else kind of follows. I mean, I really think that debunks a lot of flat Earth. I mean, because then obviously the moon has to go away for a certain period of time. It matches up with the spinning of the Earth. I mean, if the moon is a sphere and is a solid object that's floating above the Earth and circling around it, I mean, that seems to me like it doesn't necessarily prove that we are circling around the sun, but it certainly proves that the Earth is a sphere and the moon is circling around us, right? That, to me, again, that...
If the moon is a sphere and we see it blocking the sun, that certainly proves the Earth is a sphere. That is completely non sequitur, meaning not sequential. It doesn't follow at all. He even pointed out you can't say the pool table is a ball because there are pool balls. You can't point to the light bulb and say, oh, we must be standing on a light bulb. It's basically the meme of the guy looking at the telescope and say, son, you see those spheres up there? That you see what we see in the sky? That proves the Earth that we're standing on is a sphere. He just pointed out that he agreed that that isn't proof, and then he said that it's proof that we're on a sphere.
That's just imminently observable.
Like I said, it could be a sphere. It does somewhat look like a sphere. I will just say stars have been seen through the moon, it appears. I think that reality is way more mind-blowing than we know. And people think they have answers to everything. But really, when you look under the hood, there aren't answers for everything. But if we kind of talk about that, if we use like Occam's razor, that which requires the least amount of assumptions is most likely to be true. Doesn't mean it is true. But we see the sun and the moon appear to be the same size. We have a night light and a daylight. And they're the same exact size in such an extent that we can get perfect total solar eclipses. And they claim that that is just a coincidence based on the way that a Mars-sized body hit the Earth and broke it up, and a little piece of debris stuck around the Earth, and then gravity coalesced into a sphere that stopped around 238,000 miles away. Just coincidentally, the size of that rock matches up with the size of the sun optically, even though it's 400 times smaller than it is.
That is the case, right? I mean, it is the same size perspectively as the sun, but clearly it's on the same plane as the sun since it passes in front of it.
So that is the case. Okay. Let me just make sure that everyone understands what I'm pointing out. It's called Occam's razor. That which requires the least amount of assumptions is most likely to be true. And specifically, it's when you have two explanations for the same phenomena. So in this case, it is the sun and the moon appear to be the same size. Option A, they're the same size. Option B, that it's just an illusion. Actually, the sun's 400 times bigger than the moon, just coincidentally, exactly 400 times further away, so that they appear to be the same size. Okay, so both presented viable explanations as to the apparent size. Occam's razor would dictate that you go with the answer that is void of assumptions, right? Requires the least amount of assumptions and is the least complex. Now, it doesn't always... it's not 100% bulletproof or whatever, but it is a fundamental staple of logic, bro, of logic. You're going to have to empirically verify an alternative claim, dude, right? Like, it's not good enough to just say, like, here's a story that would make it possible, right? That's an appeal to possibility. This is fundamental logic. The sun and moon appear to be the same size because they are the same size. Or actually, it's just an optical illusion. The sun's 400 times bigger than the moon, just exactly 400 times further away, to such an extent that we have perfect total solar eclipses, the Stillman of the globe Earth model. Occam's razor would say you obviously go with the fact that they're the same size. That's what we empirically observe. And it requires the least amount of assumptions. That's least complex. That's why I mentioned Occam's razor. And that was just kind of skated past. And then he makes this point. He says, well, that is true. They are optically the same size. Yeah, that's why I'm bringing up Occam's razor. And then he says there must be on a different planes, right? Because he's assuming, again, that the moon is going in front of the sun. It's not necessarily going in front of the sun. But if you were to say that it was, it wouldn't be a problem for flat Earth. And we'll let it play out a little bit longer, and I'll explain it.
So whatever that differential is, it has to be – I mean, that is accurate, right?
Sure, but if it was just barely behind it, it would look like the same size. So they could be very similar distances in the same size, right?
They'd have to be a little bit, because they are exactly the same size and different. And again, I don't think that just because the moon is a sphere, that means that...
they are exactly the same size and different. Like, if the sun was just behind the moon, like just behind it, right, with any... telescope, any optical device we have known to man, right, they would look like they're the same size. And it would all be relative to distance and their size, but angular size, you're not going to be able to tell the difference. And by the way, there are contradictory claims in the globe paradigm. Some claim that it is exactly the same size. Some say it's not quite technically exactly the same size. They're a little different, but it's close enough that we have perfect total solar eclipses. But if everyone understands the point here, if the sun was to theoretically go right behind the moon, if it was really close to it and they're the same size, it's going to look like they're the same size with any optical device known to man. You're not going to be able to tell the difference. It would have to be a significant distance difference, or like a decently significant distance difference.
I trust that they understand how it was created. Or, I mean, I the moon could be hollow for all we know. The whole, like, it rang like a bell when they crashed something into it. I mean, there have been a lot of stories. I don't think we know everything about the moon's entire life cycle, but I do think it's a sphere in the sky, which, you know, would hint that there are other spheres in the sky. It would hint that that's a possibility. It would make me question why the moon doesn't fall when everything else falls to Earth because of gravity. It would hint that either it's not affected by the force of gravity, or it's being affected in a different way. which to me explains orbit pretty well.
What? He's saying like it's either not affected by gravity. Like what? Your model claims that it's free falling through the geodesic path of the bending and warping of space-time, which is gravity. And by the way, this is a fact. NASA put out a bunch of pictures of the Earth from space, which is one of the things that they're showing here called Earthrise. And people did some contrast and forensic analysis and found out that the Earth had been photoshopped in and then circulated. They pulled the picture and publicly admitted that they had photoshopped it, and they released the PR excuse that, well, they just thought that was a beautiful angle that they weren't able to actually capture while they were there, so they just photoshopped the Earth in. That is a real story, officially, right? Think about that. So they put out a picture mixed in with all these other pictures claiming it was real. It was then proven to be fake. They came out and admitted they photoshopped it, but they weren't going to tell anyone. They were just going to let them think it's real until we caught it. Yeah, very trustworthy group of people there.
Make me question why the moon doesn't fall when everything else falls to Earth because of gravity. You know, it would hint that either it's not affected by the force of gravity or it's being affected in a different way, which to me explains orbit pretty well, pretty succinctly. I want to show a couple couple images here because this again sort of illustrates to me that not only is the moon a sphere, but it's being lit by a light source that is extremely far away. We can go to some of the pictures called Ball and Moon. And there are a couple of these, but you can do it yourself. If you see the moon during the daytime and you hold a ball up, they have essentially the same shadow. It will be cast on the ball as the moon because they're both being lit by the same source, which would be the sun, which would be extremely far away. So
they specifically don't have the same shadow. Look how different that is than that distinct line. We'll periodically read the donation throughout, so don't worry, we'll catch up to them. Those are specifically not the same. And as for eclipses, which no globe earther ever addresses this, I'll even come full screen for this. Actually, the strongest evidence against the claim that there's a spherical moon passing in front of a spherical sun, right, or that the Earth is a sphere passing in between the sun and the moon in a lunar eclipse, is when you actually replicate that. If you take a sphere and then you block out light to cast a shadow onto another sphere and you move it across the face of the sphere, right, the shadow is not just a circle that goes across the sphere. Because of the convexity of the sphere you're casting a shadow on, it actually creates a sine wave shape of a shadow. It becomes an elongated hump as it goes over the surface. You cannot replicate a sphere casting a shadow on another sphere, creating a perfect circle as you move it across the face. It doesn't do that, right? As it begins to go over the convex surface, it actually stretches out. And this is just a fact. I've never even heard anyone address it. And actually, dude, I got a community noted on X where they're like, oh, actually, S waves are a phenomena in seismology, which I already know that. They're P and S waves, specific type of, waves in seismology. No, I'm talking about an S wave, a sine wave, the shape of a sine wave. And that's what we were talking about, the shape of the shadow. And then they community noted me for it. Like, this is the world that we live in. So anyway, I mean, if someone wants to actually replicate a spherical object casting a shadow on another sphere going across the face of it and the shadow remaining a perfect circle the entire time, please enlighten me, because we have replicated it. It doesn't do that. And that would be direct falsification of the claim that it's actually a sphere of the Earth blocking the light from the sun casting a shadow onto the moon in a lunar eclipse. So this is what like, there's one side that diligently tests everything, has been looking into it for years and discovering it doesn't add up. And there's another side that just kind of takes what we've been given, is afraid to look into it, and then tries to find reasons to dismiss it, and then gaslights the other side. So I encourage you not to be that group, regardless of kind of where you are currently on, which side you're currently on.
How would this happen without an extremely far away sun lighting both the ball and the moon?
Well, for one thing.
Also, another point, do you see this right here? You see this right here? This is a hot spot. And this is the sun's light, I'm assuming, right? So you see how we actually have a hot spot on a sphere because the light is not evenly distributed on a spherical surface. So you're actually going to have the closest point receiving the light that's going to have a hot spot. We never see a hot spot on the moon. How do you actually even invoke this as replication when it shows a hot spot, but the moon never does? Never does. But on all spheres, there are hot spots. See the bright little circle right there? It's a hot spot.
Extremely far away sun lighting both the ball and the moon.
Well, for one, they actually don't look entirely the same, right? You actually see that there's a gradient of light.
Same thing here. You see the hot spot right there.
On a pretty similar, object. Though. They are somewhat similar.
Yes.
That's how we made the model, right? We looked at the sky and then we created the model over hundreds of years. So, of course, it matches the sky. That's how we made it, the globe Earth model. But
and it always sort of matches the sky. But the point I'm making there is, this is important. What happened was over the course of hundreds of years, we looked up at the sky and we started designing a Earth model, assuming a sphere, and we had to change it thousands of times. It's still being changed on a daily basis. And like to try to match the sky, we took the sky and made a model of a globe. That's how we made it. To come along hundreds of years later and point to the sky and say, look, the globe Earth model matches the sky. That proves the globe Earth model is true is insane. It's very illogical, fundamentally illogical. That's how the globe Earth model was made in theory. It was designed and crafted by reverse engineering celestial observation to then say, look, it matches celestial observation is ridiculous. Of course it does. That's how it was made. It wouldn't even exist without that as the foundation. So let's actually apply logic, because truth doesn't fear investigation. If the Earth is a tilted, wobbling, spinning sphere flying around the sun, we don't have to be illogical to prove it, right? We should be able to use straight logic and reason to actually verify that.
There could be a relationship between it being lit up, or there are many theories about it. Like everything, it could have an electromagnetic relationship. It could be charged.
Someone said, wouldn't the hotspot just be explained by the glossy texture though? No, it's been replicated on also a rock, like an actual spherical rock, a giant spherical rock also still had a hotspot in the sunlight. So it's not just because of the glossy surface. No, sir.
Charging up. It could all be within the same energetic cycle above us or whatever. I'm not even saying that they don't have a relationship. Many people have tried to, measure the moonlight and say it isn't hot, and there's all debate about that and stuff. But this is kind of what I was talking about, though. I get that this is probably even a good faith, genuine question. That's how you want to know how everything works. And since we've been given all these alleged answers as to how it works, we think, well, flat Earth has to replace everything I was told is true. But not really. We see a star through the moon. What they said can't be true. Like we just saw that the moon looks blue during the day. And well, then we showed a picture of the Earth from the moon, which was NASA came out and admitted they photoshopped one of those pictures and didn't tell the public about it. Right. Just a second ago that was shown. So I guess what I'm saying is do you agree that if the radius of the globe is falsified, everything else is falsified. So as to a question like, how would the moon work on a flat Earth? I don't know, but it is because we measured the surface of the Earth. I think that is the most important part. And I want to say this one more thing. When it comes to you're right, it's like you can't look at the ceiling and say that's what the floor is, right? Mm-hmm. It's even more than that. It's if the Earth is in the center of the entire universe, it would be illogical to think that it's like everything else. It's the only thing that's in the middle. Everything else was created to move around it, right? So that's an important distinction there that most people don't point out. It would be illogical to say the Earth should be like what's in the sky when everything in the sky moves around the Earth. The Earth is distinctly different, right?
But again, we're dealing with two forms of reality, the perception and the actual, right?
So this will actually be the second attempt that I tried to politely move the conversation back to verification or falsification of the radius value, and not pointing out that if that R value wrongs, the entire model's wrong. Gravity uses that value, day and night cycle, everything about the model uses the R value. If that is wrong, it's the most concise or the most precise and efficient way to test the claim that the Earth is a sphere and that this model is true, to test the radius value. Some people will find out, they'll start seeing the evidence, they'll say, oh, well, that doesn't mean the Earth's not a sphere, maybe it's just a bigger sphere. No. That changes distances on the Earth, the day and night cycle, everything falls apart immediately. It can't just be a bigger sphere. So I tried to push it back to that again. And then the other point that I was making is, when you're having a debate, if you're talking about the other side and you're like, well, if the Earth was flat, that wouldn't make any sense because look at the stuff in the sky at the sphere. Well, for one, you can't point to the sky and say that's what the ground is. We've covered that multiple times. It's like pointing at a light bulb and saying, look, that's a light bulb. The ground must be a light bulb. It's insane. Have you ever been to a planetarium? It would be like looking up and saying the ground must be, you know, a curved surface made of lights. It's like, no, you're on the flat ground. The pole ball analogy as well. But even more than that, if you're going to attack another position or claim to debunk it or refute it, you have to steel man it. Okay. And so that's the opposite of straw manning it. Right. So obviously steel man is presenting the strongest form of that argument. And if you're saying, well, it doesn't make any sense for the earth to be the one thing that's different than everything else, that is not a steel man, because the flat stationary earth claim is that the earth is not moving. Therefore, the universe is geocentric, which means it would be the earth in the center, everything moving around it. You may not believe that, right? You may think it actually isn't in the center, whatever. But if you're claiming to rebut this other idea, you have to actually articulate what the idea is properly, or you're just strawmanning the argument. So to say that it's illogical to think the earth wouldn't be like everything else, in this position, it's not illogical. It's actually intrinsic, because the earth being geocentric means it's the only thing in the center. It's distinctly different from everything else. So it would be illogical to claim it should be like everything else. It's fundamentally not like everything else, right? It has the singular, special, and unique position of the center. That's an important part. My point is, what I found out is this conversation, logical people all of a sudden throw logic out the window. And again, I'm going to reiterate, if the earth really is a sphere like they claimed it is, there's no reason that we can't logically assess it and then prove it. That is why flat earthers exist. You can't do that. You actually are not going to be able to do that. You're going to have to use logically fallacious reasoning to claim that the earth is a sphere. And I'll ask this question to the chat or whoever. Can anyone provide actual empirical evidence that verifies the earth is in fact a sphere, that the globe model is true, void of logically fallacious reasoning? And I've had people try, and no one can ever do it. They always just give me logical fallacy. So
it looks like everything's circling around us, but that would also be the case if we were spinning. It would look like everything was circling around us. That would mean it was circling around us. So it doesn't seem to me like there's any evidence that Earth is the center. I mean, what about the mapping of planets? Because I know one of the things,
So instead of addressing the point I'm making, which is it's illogical, the point I just made, he says that there's no evidence that the Earth's in the center. It's like, bro, you're supposed to be saying why this position wouldn't work. Your argument was that look at the stuff in the sky. And I'm pointing out you can't prove what's on the ground with the sky. And it doesn't make sense anyway from our position, the Earth's in the center. And then he responded by saying, I've seen no evidence the Earth is in the center. So that's not addressing my argument, right? But like I said, I actually prioritize amicability. I didn't care if people took false victory laps. It's all good.
We have an image of this motion of solar system planets relative to Earth. So basically, this would be the orbital path that the other planets would take, Mars, Venus, you know, all these other planets. If Earth is assumed to be the center, and they're like, you know, spirals. They're like they move around a lot. And if the crew can pull up that picture, motion of solar system, we can pull it up on my screen. So, you know, how do you explain these paths and this motion without, you know, a force acting on the planets other than gravity? I mean, how do you have a planet going towards and away from us if they're circling around us?
Well, there is a force. Automatically, there's some type of force, right? Because everything's moving around. Mm-hmm. If you look at a ferrule cell image of a magnetic field, so it's just a creative invention that was made, used two little pieces of glass, you put ferrule fluid and another fluid inside of it, line it with LED lights, and you can see the magnetic field.
Right.
It makes that exact.
Specifically, you can see the distribution of the ferrule fluid in response to the magnetic field, and then based on that distribution, the light illuminates the field lines.
Exact same pattern. The torus field, sacred geometry, the golden ratio. That torus field, every one of those planets pass fit perfectly within a torus field. And of course, the heliocentric side's explanation for this is it's just a coincidence, which is pretty ridiculous.
Well,
as we see the same.
Okay, now he said it's just random squiggly lines, like little spirals, random squiggly lines. I pointed out these are not random squiggly lines. This is the most common geometry found in all of nature. It's sacred geometry, the flower of life. It's the geometry of a torus field. It is, therefore, objectively not just random squiggly lines. It's a very specific, coherent pressure mediation geometry. So, like, intellectual honesty would dictate you say, okay, I didn't know that, or that's interesting, that's fascinating, right? I'll pull up my X post in just a sec as, I'll play a little bit longer.
You see the same geometry everywhere.
But how can it match perfectly when each planet is a different path? I mean, they can't all match perfectly because they don't match each other.
Yeah, but within a Taurus field, there are multiple different paths, right? So if you look at a Frailsill image, and I could maybe pull it up, but if you look at a magnetic field, you're going to see that all of those patterns are in there individually. And basically, each one of these quote-unquote planets are taking their own path within this Taurus field. They all fit within it perfectly.
There are many different paths within it. So what we'll do is we'll come over here, and I will actually pop this up. Okay, so that's a little small. See if I can... Okay. So I said, it's always funny to hear people might just mindlessly regurgitate that a geocentric flat Earth cosmology doesn't have a working model. The truth is, we have a significantly better model, and it's not even close. The path of the planets and satellites from a geocentric plane position perfectly overlay onto the torus field geometry of a magnetic field. The magnetic flux data on Earth also perfectly matches the vortex in the center of the magnetic field geometry. Further, this vortex motion has been empirically verified with incredibly precise interferometry measurement. This torus field geometry is observed throughout all of nature, from the smallest to the largest scale. So we have a model that unifies all scales of physics and perfectly matches observation and measurement. The alternative claim is that this is all merely coincidence and illusion. Space-time, dark matter, and dark energy are tricking us. Trust me, bro. Tough decision. And this is a still man, right? It's somewhat facetious, but it is a still man. It is that the combination of space-time and the bending and warping of these concepts and dark matter and dark energy and accelerative expansion are creating this illusion that tricks us into thinking that we're in the center, but we're really not. Right. And it break in because of the need to keep on to this relativistic framework. It has separated the quantum scale from the local scale, from the cosmological scale, and had to plug in dark matter and stuff to try to keep the cosmological scale alive. Now, here is a Frailsill image. OK, and this you'll see that these patterns fit directly in that. And I'll pull this up in just a second to show it even further. I'll open this up. So you'll see this is Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and all of them fit within this at different places. And this is another Frailsill image right here. This is a Frailsill image top down, and this same vortex is in this image right towards the middle. I guess you can't see my mouse. So in the bottom left, you'll see the vortex. These are just Frailsill images of a magnetic field. You'll see the magnetic flux data on a plane Earth matches that. We've actually measured the vortex with interferometry, right? And it changes with altitude. It actually increases as you get closer to the sky, etc. So what's interesting is that you can take the ISS path here and towards the bottom right, and it also matches. So all the planets perfectly match this geometry. So what I'm now going to do is I'm going to come over full screen, and we'll go to... Actually, we'll just do it this way. Let me find the PowerPoint. Okay. And we'll close that. So if I pull this same PowerPoint back up, I'll show you exactly what I'm talking about. Okay. So I pointed out in this PowerPoint that this is the natural design seen in all of nature. The flat Earth geocentric cosmology is so much more beautiful, elegant, and viable. It's not even close. I wasn't just saying that, and I wasn't being hyperbolic. This is the natural design seen in all of nature because of pressure mediation. So you see in all these plant life and these vegetables, et cetera, and these fruits. This is what they claim that the actual geometry of an atom is. Now, I won't get into destroying atomism right now. I have a stream on it. I'll do one in the future. But the phenomenon is real. The materialistic, quantified perception of it is not necessarily real. It's a model that's reified. But this is a general... pressure mediation pattern that's seen on the quantum scale. What a coincidence. So here we see it in nature again. Here we see it in nature once again. And I won't read off all of them. We'll do a future presentation. But this is the geometry. If you look up here, you have the vortex inside of it. So basically like an hourglass, right? It's called a hyperboloid. And then you have the toroid, the outside. They're overlapped. They're connected. The inside and the outside, there's a portion of it that's moving in towards the center. There's a portion moving out because magnetic fields are incredibly meticulous, you know, fields. And they are like the field, the one true field. So again, it's the top view of a ferrocell image right here. And here you'll see the actual patterns. And this is what I was explaining to him. There are multiple patterns within a torus field, right? Depending on the amount of rotations within that torus field, there are different field lines. Here's sound creating the same exact patterns, right, with cymatics. It's the material displacement due to vibration creates the same patterns. Here are piano notes actually doing the same thing with to water, right? All right, we won't go through the actual presentation, but here is the same ferrocell image. And here we'll get to a few more and we'll move on. These are what people call cells. We won't get into that whole rabbit hole either, but what a coincidence. We see the same geometry biologically. Here is a ferrocell image, and you see the vortex very clearly with the overlapping flower of life. You see where these intersect here. I hope you can see my mouse. Yeah, where you see these intersect here, they create like a point, right? Now, they're actually just curving up, but they intersect and make a point. That's why it's called the flower of life, because it looks like a flower, like petals of a flower. Here is a time-lapse of the star trails. Wow, what a coincidence, right? And then I go through a bunch of things that people claim are impossible on a flat Earth, which they're obviously not. Here's the apparent solar eclipse. What a coincidence. It matches the ferrocell with the magnetic field viewer. Here's the path of the moon over a plain Earth. This geometry is seen everywhere. So this would be the actual depiction. So it's important to understand this. I think I actually cover, this is Einstein admitting that we can never prove that the Earth is moving and everything happens as if it's not. Here are all the actual things to back up what I said about the empirical measurement of the vortex. You can go look all these up. You can also go to my Telegram, t.me/misswits. You can also go to t.me/witsitstreams to get a lot of the resources that we talk about here. But these are all empirical interferometry measurements that have shown that, you know, the actual interferometry measurements change based on the altitude and based on the periodicity of the sun and the moon. None of these things should happen on a spinning globe. We don't have time to get into all that. Here's another depiction of it so you can wrap your mind around it. You have the two different conjugate geometries. Okay. And again, here is all the planets from the Earth in the center. And you see that flower of life geometry. It's not random squiggly lines. It is the geometry seen in all of nature, from the small scale to the big scale. And when you don't have to assume the Earth is flying through space, you introduce an etheric background where everything is interconnected, and you have a grand unified theory, a theory of everything. Literally, it unifies all of physics that's currently at a standstill. We have a significantly superior model. It's not even close. This is not a random pattern. This is what is seen in nature due to pressure mediation, vibrational displacement, and magnetic fields. Here's Mars from a geocentric position. Again, the flower of life geometry. Here's a geocentric path of all the planets. Again, flower of life geometry. Nothing about this is random. So I want to point that out to misconception, because people see the circles and they're like, oh, that's so cool. It's like, yeah, you threw yourself within the torus field and claimed you're moving around in relation to the other things moving. Of course, you're going to get circles. That's how it works, because there's a vortex. But these things follow field lines within it. It's very important to grasp this. So, and then what we can actually do also real fast is we'll go here and pop this back up. And then I'll show you what I dropped down below as well. I explain. The central portion of the field is called a block domain wall. This is the official name because it's named after the guy who discovered the plane in the middle of the magnetic field. So his name was Block, his last name. Or can accurately be described as an inertial plane. Inertia means unchanging. So it's a plane that remains constant. It's unchanging, an inertial plane. Within the true Earth model being proposed, this would be where the Earth is located. The observed celestial phenomena reference would be taking place within the upper half of the field. So you see that this would be the plane of inertia, the inertial plane, or the block domain wall. Here you see it in the ferrocell image. You can also use a magnetic viewing film, and you'll see there's just like a gap, a white gap in the magnetic film over the magnet that has a plane of inertia. It's called a block domain wall. It's a well-known phenomena, and you would be experiencing the top half of this. It has a vortex, and you have all of this other geometry, this conjugate geometry. It perfectly matches what we see on Earth from the Earth as a geocentric position. So I just thought it was important to cover that real quickly. Let's continue.
You said that you don't see any evidence that the Earth's in the center. You are aware that the current model says you could never prove that the Earth's not in the center, and that all astronomical observations make it appear as if the Earth is in the center of the universe, but right. that's just an illusion.
Well, so it's an illusion because we're on Earth and this is our only platform from which to observe space.
Sure, and it gets a little bit more complex than that, though, because even like the distant galaxies moved in relation to the Earth, right? And so then that's when Edwin Hubble was like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. And they had to say the whole universe is accelerating and expanding in all directions to create that illusion. And then they're like, wait, what caused...
And respectfully, I feel like he's not listening. Respectfully, right? I mean, like, I feel like he's kind of not listening.
To observe space.
Sure, and it gets a little bit more complex than that, though, because even, like, the distant galaxies moved in relation to the Earth, right? And so then that's when Edwin Hubble was like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. And they had to say the whole universe is accelerating and expanding in all directions to create that illusion. And then they're like, wait, what causes that to happen, though? There has to be some type of energy that would make it expand faster than the speed of light. And that's where you get dark energy, which is never been discovered, defined. It'll never be found. And then you have dark matter to fix the gravity problems. I will actually say you can use a Lorentz magnetic force to not get too technical, but it's pretty funny that you can show what's called a dynamic equivalence, meaning the way that the force makes objects move around each other from a geocentric universe. And it's a magnetic Lorentzian force. And what a coincidence, the patterns of the planets fit perfectly within a magnetic field's geometry. So it's more elegant, actually.
Okay, but none of that actually explains what the force is moving it or how it's set on this path. And the other thing is that you would also get paths.
Like, am I tripping? Like, didn't I just name a force?
So it's more elegant, actually.
Okay, but none of that actually explains what the force is moving it or how it's set on this path. And the other thing is that
none of that explains what this force is moving it or how it's set on this path. Like, brother, I just explained both of those things explicitly. Right? So I invoked a Lorentz magnetic force. Here it is. I end up invoking this very book here, you know, from a professor. In relational mechanics, we can interpret this rotation as an analog of the magnetic Lorentz force law. In this case, the spinning set of distant galaxies generates a gravitational magnetic field, which exerts a force on the moving masses. There are the equations. And it's saying that the Foucault's pendulum can no longer be utilized as proof of the Earth's real rotation. In relational mechanics, both facts can be equally explained with the frame of distant galaxies at rest, exerting a gravitational force on bodies at the Earth's surface while the Earth rotates relative to this frame, or with the Earth at rest while the distant galaxies rotate around it, exerting a gravitational force on bodies at the Earth's surface. Both explanations are equally correct and yield the same effects. It then becomes a matter of convenience or of convention to choose the Earth, the distant galaxies, or any other body of frame of reference to be considered at rest. Now, specifically, and it's important to understand this, we do not actually believe the claimed distances and the sizes and the vacuum and all this stuff. The point is that it's to dispel this notion that the geocentric model has been disproven or something, not even close. And even a pendulum wouldn't be proving that the Earth is rotating either. Within that own model. So within your own model, there's an equivalence, both a kinematic and dynamic equivalence. And what a coincidence. Now, you could apply this to any distances, any sizes, and any different medium, because the difference with gravity is it's limited to mass. So you know, certain amount of mass, certain amount of gravity, right? And that's why they have dark matter, which was originally called missing mass. Okay, it was then changed to dark matter because that's just way too blatant of a name. It was discovered by Fritz Zwicky in 1933. He looked at the Coma Cluster and saw that it only had 1% of the mass that was supposed to be there according to the gravitational prediction. It was missing, it was off by 99%. So they plugged the value in and called it missing mass. It was later called dark matter. Still, no one knows what it is. No one can define it. No one can find it. A lot of astronomers and astrophysicists dispute that it exists. People are proposing modified Newtonian dynamics to get away from having to claim that it exists because there's no evidence for it. And we can get more into that. I covered a lot in Relatively Speaking, the series that I currently have paused. We get all into all of that, how actually even if you assume dark matter is true, it's been falsified with dark matter halos and how there's no viscosity as they actually intersect and all this stuff, right? But the point is, And you're going to find, this is a reoccurring theme, that the true earthers are extremely researched. That's why we are flat earthers, quote unquote. Okay, but this is the point that I'm making. You could, the difference is with the mat, with the gravity, it's a certain amount of mass, certain amount of gravity. You're very limited. It's dependent upon proportionate mass. Now with the magnetic force, right, it's not, because you can have two magnets that are the same size, right? They're the same mass, but one can have a way stronger field than the other, right? Just because of the magnetic field strength, it could be the same size, but it's completely different, which means you can put bodies at any different distance and any different sizes and just change the magnetic properties, and it'll have a proportionate strength to that field, right? So magnetic force in the sky fixes all kinds of problems. What I was pointing out was, like, even within their own paradigms of dynamic equivalence, and this is still a bit higher level, but I'm not going to dumb it down forever. I was just trying to keep it somewhat layman terms for the people that may be open-minded. I think I did enough to where an honest truth seeker will try to come and find more information, but and hopefully there'll be a follow-up. What I'm trying to point out, though, is you should familiarize yourself with these terms: dynamic, kinematic. Kinematic is how an object moves in relation to another. So Austin walked around the pole in a circle. That's kinematic, right? Geometry, paths, how things move, like the paths they take. Dynamic would be the force that was used to make Austin move around the pole. That's dynamic, the force that causes that motion. There's a kinematic and dynamic equivalence, meaning if the Earth's in the center and you believed in relativity, or you believed in Newton, right, or you believed in gravity, as they try to claim it exists, you still couldn't say that the Earth's not in the center. It actually works better with it in the center. And the point I was making is that a Lorentz magnetic force can be applied to this with an equal and opposite reaction. We won't get too into the technicalities of it. And what a coincidence, right? He asked about the force. I said a Lorentz magnetic force. And I explained what a coincidence that the paths actually fit right within a magnetic field. And then he replied to that by saying, well, that still doesn't explain what the force is or how they move in that path. That's specifically what it just did. Specifically, I did that very thing. I explained, I proposed a force, which is a magnetic force. And I explained that, of course, the paths fit right within the torus field because that's what a magnetic field's geometry is. So that explains the path and the force, and also explains everything rotating around it as there's a vortex in the magnetic field. So I specifically explained both of those things. I don't claim to know exactly what's up there, right? But we have way, way more viable models. It's not even close. We don't need dark matter, dark energy, the inflaton. We don't need all this crazy made-up nonsense that doesn't exist. So, all right, I know that was a lot. Sorry if that was a bit much, but hopefully you guys took it in. You can maybe rewind it. I'm just pointing out that his rebuttal, I mean, it was just patently wrong, right? So let's keep going.
That you would also get paths that match up to this if you were to take a Mars-centric model and plot the movement of the planets as if Mars was the center. You would get the same patterns. I mean, it's like one of those little toys that has the gear, and you put the pencil in and spin the gear around and it creates the pattern. It doesn't matter which hole you put it in, it creates a similar pattern that will look on the face of it similar to like the torus field or the magnetic field. But that would be true if you plotted the motion of the Earth relative to Venus or Mars or Jupiter or any other planet. Earth is not the only one that plotting the rest of the planets creates this this design. So that.
Oh, sorry, I was muted. Sorry, you guys are going to start telling me, but first it was that these are just random squiggly lines, and the heliocentric model is so much more elegant and simple, and we found out that's actually not true. So now we've backtracked on the claim that it were random squiggly lines. We acknowledge that they're actually specifically elegant magnetic field lines within a torus field. That's expected, right? And we've covered, we see it in all geometry. And now it's just, oh, well, you could try to map it from any place and get the same pattern. Right. And that's a diversion. You also said that the only reason it looks like we're in the center is because we're viewing it from the Earth. That also isn't completely true. Right. It's more complicated than that because, well, I think I might cover it here.
That again, is not evidence that Earth is in the center. It's evidence that Earth is on the circular path that all the other planets are on, because that's what matches perfectly.
Well, it's not just about the paths. It's about distant galaxies. Right. So you're right. You can match it on any planet or whatever, and you could treat it as if it's in the center. Certainly with relativity, it says it's all equally valid. You can choose anything as the center. But
specifically, Einstein said, Michelson proved that everything occurs on the Earth as if the Earth is in a state of rest and that you'll never be able to tell that it's moving. And then, but he said later, like, you could say that the Earth moves around the Sun or the Sun moves around the Earth. Both are equally valid. It's simply a coordinate system preference, and that the violent struggle in the day of Copernicus and Ptolemy was quite meaningless because it's just a preference of coordinate system. And that's what I'm explaining, that relativity claims. Relativity has been debunked multiple ways. We don't have time to do that. On its face, you can't attribute physical properties to conceptual abstractions. Space and time are abstract ideas that cannot be real or physical. It's called a reification fallacy, also known as the concreteness fallacy. Tune into future or past shows to hear more about the debunk of relativity. But I'm pointing out that the distant galaxies observation is different than that. Okay, because what we saw, this was after Einstein, was that, sure, you know, you can say you can put the coordinate system wherever when it comes to the local system. But we looked further out in space, right? We saw that even the distant galaxies moved in relation to the Earth. They're not supposed to do that. They were supposed to be moving every which way. We should have seen redshift, blue shift. It was really because of direction of motion. We should have seen things going every which way. The Earth's tucked away in a little insignificant corner, but we did not see that. Okay, that was the major turning point of physics after Michelson-Morley, which was the biggest turning point of physics.
This is a little different than that. They looked out into deep space, quote unquote, and saw the galaxies moved in relation to the Earth. They should not have been. In this model, the Earth is tucked away in an insignificant corner of the universe. It is a random, non-unique position. Everything should be moving every which direction in relation to, say, the singularity of the Big Bang or whatever people believe in, not the Earth. But they discovered it was. So it's not as simple as just I can put the coordinate system anywhere. It's that the universe has to be accelerating and expanding away from every other point. There is no center, and everything just makes the Earth look like it's in the center, although you could map it out both ways. But that's not the proof. First of all, it's on its face. All observations show the Earth in the center. So to say it's not in the center, you're going to have to prove that. Then we went and looked further, and the distant galaxies show that.
But, I mean, there is the heliocentric model that maps everything and explains everything really well, and you can make predictions based on it that are proven out in observation. So, you know, to say that everything centers around the Earth,
that is a complete red herring and non sequitur and a hand wave dismissal. We weren't talking about the solar system. I explained that based on the coordinate system, say you could put Mars in the center, whatever. Relativity says the coordinate systems are equally valid either way. I explained that when it comes to the whole universe, you can't do that. You actually specifically have to claim that it accelerates and expands. He then claimed that the heliocentric model explains everything perfectly. It absolutely does not. It actually can't even explain the orbit of Mercury. Now, obviously, a geocentric model with the magnetic force absolutely can do that because it can just have a different magnetic force. It's not limited to proportionate visible mass. A very important point there, but if you don't know, there's something called the perihelion shift of Mercury. The precession of Mercury does not match gravity. When Newton had his theory, it was off pretty significantly. And then it was discovered 40 years before Einstein's theory, and he tried to work in an explanation for it, and the best he could do is get much closer, but still couldn't explain it. And then this gets into the weeds of technicality here, but yeah, they have to use something called the Kerr metric, which is a mathematical fix. They have to fluctuate the size of the sun, the amount of black body radiation, the charge of the sun. They place an imaginary body close to it, another planet that you can't see that's altering the path of Mercury and stuff. So it actually can't even explain the solar system. The mainstream will tell you that the precession of Mercury actually verified relativity. It was observed 40 years before relativity, and relativity tried to explain it and still couldn't. And it's still disputed today how you try to mathematically fix that it doesn't exactly work. Normally what you end up getting once you correct all the misinformation people say about it is, oh, well, it's not that significant, and they'll talk about how much it's off. It doesn't matter. In physics, if you're making a causal claim, like a claim of physics, a force claim, right, a dynamic claim, it has to be accurate. If there's that much mass, there's that much gravity. It doesn't matter how far it's off. If it's off, it doesn't work. But anyway, we're talking about the whole universe. He responds with, but the heliocentric model works great and can make predictions. And no, it makes postdictions. Can't even accurately do that. And when you get outside the local system, it completely falls apart to the point that we have dark matter and dark energy, which I've brought up a couple times in this quote-unquote debate already. So that's a red herring fallacy. That's what that was.
Earth. Obviously, the heliocentric model is not centered on the Earth, and that's on a very small scale. You could say the whole solar system revolves around, or the whole universe revolves around the Earth, but at least in our solar system, it makes a lot more sense that things circle around the sun. I mean, the math, it makes a lot more sense in that regard.
If you assume that the sun is 93 million miles away and this huge ball of gas in a vacuum, if you assume the size of it and then you assume gravity, which is that, you know, the bigger the mass, the more gravitational pull, which isn't even considered a pull or force anymore because that doesn't work. But that's actually not true either. The heliocentric model doesn't work. I mean, this is why we have dark matter.
Though.
It doesn't work because this is why we have dark matter.
There are certain aspects of it that...
See, I was about to school what I just covered a second ago. School them on the Fritz Zwicky 1933. It doesn't work. And, you know, not letting me finish doesn't make it work. I want to make sure everyone follows what I'm saying here. I want this to be a very edifying stream. Even if it's lengthy, you can revisit it. He's pointing out that, well, it makes sense that everything would go around the sun. And I said, well, for one, if you assume that the mass of the, that the sun's actually 93 million miles away and as big as they claim it is, for it to be as big as they claim it is and have the amount of mass they claim it is, obviously has to be very far away, right? Because we see it be the same size as the sun, et cetera. We see divergent rays, just illusions, and there is an illusion effect to convergent rays. But the point is, if you assume that the sun is this giant body that's 93 million miles away with a huge mass, and then you assume gravity, which is proportionate mass, so the bigger the mass, the stronger the gravitational pull, which is like the layman term explanation. It's not a force that pulls things down anymore. That was disproven. We just tell children that so that they can understand it. And so that's a little piece of advice. I wouldn't run around ridiculing people as unintelligent or making fun of them, claiming that gravity is a force that pulls things down, you stupid flurf. That is a very elementary layman term explanation that we tell children as is mass attracting mass, because the actual theory that had to be proposed is significantly more complex, and even top-level astronomers and astrophysicists admittedly can't understand it, and it's paradoxical, and that is the theory of relativity, which has also been debunked multiple ways. This is the point I'm making, though. First of all, keep it really simple. The idea is, well, why would the sun be going around the Earth if the sun's so much bigger than the Earth? Because gravity says the bigger the mass, then that the smaller objects move around it. First of all, that's reifying gravity and begging the question. Secondly, that's actually not true either, according to Einstein himself, right? And according to Stephen Hawking, and according to like the relational mechanics breakdown and the Machian principle. Einstein ended up conceding this, and this is the point. This guy named Ernst Mach came around, and this is where you get the speed of sound, right? Mach, okay? Not just some random guy. He came around and pointed out, so we're making a major mistake. We assumed that we can safely assume that the Earth is moving around the sun because of Newton's theory of mass, and since the sun has a bigger mass, the Earth must be going around it. But what Newton thought was that the sun was in the center of the entire universe. We now know that isn't true. We've seen that the sun is not in the center of the entire universe, which means that there is much more mass beyond this local system. What that would mean is if it was all rotating around the Earth, the force generated by the whole universe rotating around the Earth would be way stronger than the force generated by the sun. So the Earth wouldn't just move around the sun because it's a bigger mass. Actually, with a geocentric position, with the momentum of the whole universe, it wouldn't move around the sun. That would be way stronger. It would overpower the sun. When Mach came and pointed this out, that everyone kept running with Newton in this assumption, but we've now made more discoveries that actually the sun isn't the center of the universe. And side note, if you don't know the history of heliocentrism, go watch Helios Sorcery. It's on YouTube. It did get like 250,000 views before it got suppressed, but Helios Sorcery tells you the history of it. You can also go watch The Principle by Robertson Jenis if you're new to the idea of geocentrism. But, you know, they thought that the sun was a center of the entire universe. In fact, they even worshipped the sun many times. They thought it was metaphysically symbolic of enlightenment and illumination, right? And for example, Kepler said that it was basically the god of the sky that sang celestial songs and all the other planets moved around it. They thought the Earth was the center of the universe. So if you're invoking Newtonian gravity and the heliocentric model, you're invoking something from the 1600s where people thought the sun was the center of the universe and basically worshipped it. And that's a still man. That's actually, I know it sounds crazy, that's what they thought. Many of them were sun worshippers. This is important because really, heliocentric is a misnomer, right? The sun isn't the center of anything, right? Like, not even our system, right? There's actually a baryonic center now in that heliocentric model. But I just want to make sure you guys understand that. This is stuff that the mainstream will never tell you. They keep the public dumbed down, right? With everything. They give you layman term propaganda, you know, just like Joseph Goebbels said, give them really short, easy to remember terms and repeat it over and over and have them repeat it and try to get them emotional, and you'll effectively brainwash and enslave them and be able to deceive them. And that's what happens. So I want you guys to understand what I'm breaking down there. There's just think about all the information I just had to break down, and I'm still leaving tons of stuff out. And imagine trying to do it and remain amicable and not overload the audience in this. I did the best I could. So I want people to learn. I don't want to egotistically win. I just want people to learn. I want to show them that this is the biggest rabbit hole ever. They for sure are hiding the truth about where you live. And where you live is very special, very significant, incredible, beautiful realm that was engineered with mind-blowing precision. We're not in some random, you know, not a dusty rock in some random place in the universe that randomly got here. That isn't what happened. That is a lie. That is a lie. Okay. So just so you understand, that's the point that I'm making there. I didn't have time to explain all that, but hopefully you followed it. And like I said, stick around. We go through these kind of episode by episode. We give resources. We give PowerPoints. You can also go to MissWits. People will plug you. Different information. If you go to the MissWits chat, people will be happy to answer your questions. t.me/MissWits. Be respectful, and outside of that, we're pretty much just pro free speech there. So,
you know, we haven't figured out yet, but the stuff we have figured out works extremely well, right?
No. In 1933, a guy named Fritz Zwicky went and looked at galaxies, and he saw that this coma cluster, so a cluster of galaxies, it was off by 99% the amount of mass it was supposed to have for gravity to be true. And so they just said, oh, well, just plug in a number for missing mass. Now they call that missing mass dark matter. And it's still right there. And it makes up 83% of the entire universe. This model isn't even close to working. Gravity is off by 83%. How bad does your theory have to be before it's considered wrong?
Right. Well, you know, my theory actually, you know, has the possibility of distant galaxies. Where are the distant galaxies in the...
Okay, so this is a deflection to implicit ad hom, but more so a straw man. So I just made a very specific point, right? I said, no, it doesn't work. You're incorrect. I didn't explain what I had just explained here, right? The discovery, it was off by 99% with the coma cluster. And my question is, and then now when you zoom out and you say you take the whole universe, this model, you grant through, you step in their world for a second, in their backyard, their whole universe, 83% of all the mass they can't find. It's missing. There's not nearly enough mass there. So they call it dark matter, right? So very important to understand what I'm explaining. I said, how far off does your theory need to be before you consider it wrong? Is 99% off? Does that not falsify it? Does 83% not falsify it? Because if you have a theory and it predicts 100 pennies and you go look in the drawer and there's only one penny, your theory was wrong. If you just make up a name and call it 99 missing pennies and then pretend your theory was right, that's a religious bias almost, right? Like that's the opposite of science. And as Karl Popper accurately pointed out, falsifiability is the required staple of science. Okay, and this is important. And what did he do? He deflected. He didn't address that when he said that it worked great and makes all these predictions. I pointed out that it doesn't with specifics. And then he said, I said, how off does your theory have to be before it's wrong? He says, well, my theory has the possibility of distant galaxies, right? And then I don't think I even got to answer that. Let's see.
Firmament. I mean, how can you even make this argument if space doesn't exist? Does space exist?
No, outer space as defined. Right, doesn't exist. But just like Edwin Hubble said, everything could be much more local, and the medium could be much more dense. And then he said, and might I add, suspiciously young. See, they have a bias against this because it creates special position for the Earth, and it makes the universe younger. It makes it a closed system, and it means everything's moving around it. And they will tell you in all their literature that it's just a philosophical bias. They don't want to believe that, and that's not a straw man. That's what they say, right? They say it up straight. You can never disprove the Earth in the center. But the best way to do it is if the Earth is moving around the sun, 66,600 miles per hour, conveniently enough, you should be able to measure that, right? And we have interferometry that was supposed to measure it, and it did not. And we've done it since then.
Now, just to clarify, this article isn't what I was talking about, but I think that they're trying, right? Like the galaxy cluster that broke modified gravity, that is modified Newtonian dynamics, referred to as MOND. It's one of the replacements to try to get rid of dark matter, right? We're talking about the actual coma cluster observation in 1933 that falsified gravity, period, and we had to create the idea of dark matter. This says 19 years ago, the Bullitt cluster provided an empirical proof for dark matter. Even today, modified gravity still can't explain it. And actually what it did was falsify gravity. And instead of accepting that, they invented dark matter, and this literally says, provided an empirical proof for dark matter. How can you prove something that you can't define or even actually verify exists? You can't detect it. You don't even know if it exists. No one even knows what it is. It's called dark because it can't be seen. It doesn't interact with the electromagnetic spectrum. Fancy way of saying you can't see it. It doesn't interact with lights. And matter because it must have the characteristics of matter so it can have mass to fix our gravity problem. Empirical proof? And these are pop sci articles they give to the public to keep them dumbed down and make sure that basically they've bred out logic and reason and the truth. Everyone should be against that. It's ridiculous. That's why we live in the world we do, right? They've dumbed us down. But someone asked if I had a P.O. box. I do have a P.O. box, and it is P.O. box 48892, Tampa, Florida 33646. That's P.O. box 48892, Tampa, Florida 33646. All right. Let's keep going. All right. I kind of missed. Let me actually bring it back real quick.
And it's moving a rational position 33. A guy named Fritz Zwicky.
Well, figured out yet, but the stuff we have figured out works extremely well.
Zwicky, off of that, 83%. How bad does your theory have to be before it's considered wrong? Right?
Well, you know, my theory actually, you know, has the possibility of distant galaxies. Where are the distant galaxies in the firmament? I mean, how can you even make this argument if space doesn't exist? Does space exist?
No, outer space as defined, right, doesn't exist.
Okay, and that's what I wanted to kind of give a little more details, because I really wanted to make sure that I got across to the audience that this model has been falsified, and these baseless assertions that it's accurate and all this stuff is incorrect. But obviously, galaxies are a real phenomenon. You can observe them. Okay, what people call galaxies are real. They're not what people have said that they are. And guess what? Conveniently enough, they move in spirals just like a magnetic field, bro. Everything's electromagnetic. Everything's magnetic. Everything's electric. To think that the sky would be the one exception, can you name one compilation of matter in all of existence, right, that isn't electrostatic intrinsically electric? No, there's nothing that exists. Everything's electric. Everything has some form of magnetoreactive properties. Everything that exists. To think the sky is some exception is insane, especially when all of it matches perfectly within a magnetic field. Galaxies are the same way. How can that exist within a firmament? There's some type of containment. Seemingly there are layers, right? And it looks like the sun and moon are a little closer. And then you have the stars further away. You have things that people call galaxies or supernovas or nebulas or quasars. You have all this astronomical phenomena, celestial phenomena going on in the sky. It's incredibly beautiful. It's majestic. It's just much more local, right? And there seems to be a more dense medium. The phenomenon is real. It's what people think it is isn't real. We would expect all that stuff to move in relationship to the Earth because it is all just moving around the Earth in the center, like over top of a stationary topographical plane within a torus field. So it's not that space is fake, although it's catchy and people say it, right? People say space is fake and gay. It's funny, but it's actually outer space as has been defined is fake. Okay, it's the interpretation of what's above us that they call outer space that we dispute, right? The vacuum, the distances, the sizes, the claim of gravity, have been falsified. These are claims that have been falsified or antithetical to natural law, etc. So I did want to clear that up because I prioritized in the moment. I wanted to get the information out there of how it got falsified instead of like really kind of address that. I think we should play it again because what I say right here is very important. And this is not me lying. I have no reason to lie. Like I said, this is the truth. I didn't want to be a flat earther. Why would I want to be a flat earther? People will gaslight you and say, you just want to be special and think you found something. No. People can say what they want to, but it's obvious I do have somewhat of an aptitude to articulate myself. I could do content and not talk about flat earth, right? Like I could do something similar to what he does. I could talk about politics. I could talk about societal events, political events, geopolitical events. And I'd be way more accepted. I'd have way more popularity, right? But I don't do that. I speak the truth. I seek and speak truth unequivocally, even whenever it hurts me financially, when it hurts my reputation because people are uninformed. Doesn't matter, okay? And the truth is just what the truth is. So I'm pointing out what actually happened, and I explain this extensively in Relatively Speaking. We're going to play it, and I'm going to give a little bit more details because I think it's very important. Like I said, this may be lengthy. I'm going to make sure it's very informative and edifying. You can play it back, but let's get back to it.
Exist. But just like Edwin Hubble said, everything could be much more local, and the medium could be much more dense. And then he said, and might I add, suspiciously young. See, they have a bias against this because it creates special position for the Earth, and it makes the universe younger. It makes it a closed system, and it means everything's moving around it. And they will tell you in all their literature that it's just a philosophical bias. They don't want to believe that. And that's not a straw man. That's what they say, right? They say it up straight. You can never disprove the Earth in the center. But the best way to do it is if the Earth is moving around the sun, 66,600 miles per hour, conveniently enough, you should be able to measure that, right? And we have interferometry that was supposed to measure it, and it did not. And we've done it since then. The Earth is not moving. It's been falsified. So Einstein came in and said, oh, well, the device you were using to measure actually shrank. You just couldn't tell. And then time slowed down and created the illusion that we are stationary and you can't measure us moving. That's mainstream claim, is that the ruler shrank effectively. You just can't tell. And time slowed down. It just appears to be the same time to you.
Right.
And therefore, you could never prove that the Earth is moving. Or, of course, just the Earth isn't moving and all observations showing us what's really happening. Right? So we weren't told any of this.
But then that would mean that if the Earth's not moving, then the stars are moving. The sun is circling around us again. So so we have a firmament dome around a flat Earth. You don't actually have a model, right? So
you see how he didn't address anything that I said. So when people are saying I didn't do good or whatever, like, well, I was just trying to be nice. Like, I'm trying to get the information out to as many people as possible. He didn't address anything that I just said. Okay, and I just explained that they admit that you can't prove that the Earth is actually moving around the sun. In fact, it was falsified. And then I said they claim it's a philosophical decision. If you don't know, maybe one of the mods can help me out. They can go to my channel and scroll down a bit. You won't be able to search it. Obviously, I'm censored. But if you go to my channel and find the geocentrism stream, if you'll drop it here, that would be great. And anyone that's watching, you can look up, go to my channel, Once It Gets It, and you'll have to go to live and go down and find it. You can't search it. Or it's like two pages down or whatever, but it's geocentrism. I go through all the astronomers, astrophysicists, mainstream quotes, all in context, explaining that the Earth being in the center is viable. We can't prove it. That's what observations suggest, but we just think that we philosophically don't prefer it, right? And Stephen Hawking said, on grounds of modesty, I choose not to believe it. And, we have Edwin Hubble saying that a special position and unique position is intolerable and horrific. The horror of a special position. This is not science. Okay. And they're saying that the Copernican principle is more logical, that the Earth doesn't occupy a special or unique position. And then they assume if the universe is really this big, then it would be more logical to think we are randomly here. Of course, they're assuming the size based on the assumption that we are not in the center. Do you not see how it's circular logic? It's fundamentally fallacious and illogical. And it's a philosophical bias running around fronting as if it's science. So very important things. And like I said, geocentrism, we break that all down. I could pull up some of the quotes here. What people try to say is that they're cherry picked and that they're quote mining, but they're not, because I did the research myself. You can go – now, there were a couple that like maybe I could have wrote the quotes up better. I put like 100-something quotes together all night, and so I started kind of becoming delirious looking, because I was fact-checking every source and stuff. But you can go read it. I'm not misrepresenting what they said. And they'll say that because they can't respond. They can't say, okay, yeah, fair enough. These people are all – they have to say that it's out of context, but they're not. You can verify yourself. And the biggest point I made right there was they didn't tell us any of this. They told us that the Earth is factually and objectively moving around the sun, and that there's this huge universe that's accelerating and expanding, and it's so massive. They told us that it's a scientific fact. It's been definitively proven. When you actually go look at the quote-unquote experts that brought you the model – the current state of the model, Einstein, Arthur Eddington, Stephen Hawking, the list goes on and on and on. People you probably haven't heard of, right? Wolfgang Pauli, all these people. You will see the guy that – I'm blanking on his name, but the guy that actually coined the term Big Bang, which was actually as a slight but very famous astronomer. They'll tell you like you can't prove it. And it's a philosophical decision, and it's actually a difficult one because the evidence keeps showing us that we're stationary. We have to keep updating everything. My point is, why were we lied to about that? If we're really moving through space, why wouldn't they just tell us? Well, technically, we could be in the center. People think it's more logical that we're not. Why would they lie to you and tell you it's the definitive fact, right? If you Google, it'll tell you retrograde proves it. Retrograde is exactly equivalent either way. Retrograde doesn't prove anything. It doesn't prove that we're moving through space. Like, oh, you see the stars move. Like, what? Your evidence that the stars aren't moving is, and that we're moving is that you can't detect that we're moving and we see the stars moving. So actually the opposite's true. You were lied to. And this is the truth. People are intellectually intimidated by this because they're like, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a physicist. I'm not an astronomer. I'm not an astrophysicist. And though they don't want to get into this conversation on the wrong side, it's much safer to just say the mainstream consensus as if you know it, kind of ridicule the other people and project insecurity and stuff like that. And this is a dangerous mentality to have. We saw that with the pandemic, right? I encourage people, think for yourself. So, and we can go through some of them. I'll pull up some of the quotes in a second, but this is important. It takes some time to learn this, but didn't it take some time to make sure you didn't get genetically modified and research it? Doesn't truth take some time? Certainly when there's censorship and it's being suppressed, is truth not worth knowing? Is the biggest lie in history not worth investigating? If there's even a slight chance it's possibly true that the Earth is actually a geocentric stationary plane, would that not be worthy of investigation? So I encourage you, just invest the time and you'll see what happens. All the people even the people that are obsessed with it for years that attack flat Earth, they can't even still man flat Earth 7 years in because they can't truly look into it, honestly. And all the truthers that say that they know that flat Earth is a psyop, they haven't investigated it diligently and honestly. It's a reoccurring theme that the people that do that, honestly, they are over here. They know the globe Earth is wrong. It's been falsified.
What is your conception of what Earth is? I mean, again, my conception of Earth is not exactly super scientific. Like, I don't know all of the details of it, but it makes perfect sense. Earth is spinning, tilted axis, moon orbiting us. We orbit the sun, other planets also orbiting the sun. I mean, all of that makes perfect sense. Do you have any semblance of a model for flat Earth at all?
Yeah, sure. So it's a torus field. Just a torus field, and that explains pretty much everything. I could pull up an image. I don't know if that's possible, but yeah. A ferrule cell image of a torus field will show you. Can just Google ferrule cell image magnetic field. You'll see a bunch of them. It's just a torus field, and there's a vortex in the middle. And what a coincidence. You take the magnetic flux data of the Earth, you put it on a flat Earth map, and you get a perfect vortex around the center. You take the planets and you fit them within the torus field. It's perfect. So, and of course, they claim.
It's not perfect. I mean, you can bring up the image, but it doesn't match perfectly. It generally looks somewhat like it, but because magnetic fields, you know, visualized match the magnetic field of Earth, I mean, that's not even...
That's not what I said at all. Magnetic fields visualize and match the magnetic field of Earth. Is that what I said? Or did I say that the pattern of the planets perfectly fit within the geometry of a magnetic field viewed under a ferrule cell?
You can bring up the image, but it doesn't match perfectly. It generally looks somewhat like it, but because magnetic fields, you know, visualized match the magnetic field of Earth, I mean, that's not even... So, I mean, is this your model or, I mean, that Earth is round.
So what is that? Like, what is this straw man going on? I'm sharing screen right now, by the way. And someone pointed out a great question. Yeah. If the Earth was flat, would you want to know? And when people say, I don't think it changed my life and all this stuff, and I still have to go to work. Okay. If 9/11 was lied about, would you still have to go to work? If the Federal Reserve actually isn't federal, would you still have to go to work? If they were trying to rush out bioweapons, would you still actually have to still go to work? Like, somehow truth is all of a sudden not important. If there's a circle drawn around you and you're in the Hunger Games where you can't leave your little playpen and be a good slave, and the Earth is actually bigger and it's in the center of the universe, and they told you you're insignificant and it's random and you're a dusty piece of rock, and the moon was just a piece of the Earth that got broke off over billions of years of randomness. Everything is inverse of what you experience. You can't trust your senses. Would you want to know that? How would that not be? I still have to go to work. That is the most insane cope I've ever heard. This is not what I said at all, of course, but I don't have to go too much in detail. I pulled up the PowerPoint earlier and we covered it, right? What I was actually stating.
So that can't be it, right?
No, this is a flat Earth. Ironically, this is actually the ISS trajectory on the left. This right here and this is.
See, so I thought he was seeing what I said. I thought he said that's a globe. I thought he was talking about the picture I was sharing, which I just showed you some of them. But he wasn't. He was seeing what they put up, right? And he couldn't see it. And I trust them. I believe that that's what happened, right? I don't go the whole like, oh, they're trying to sabotage me route. I think they're biased. I think there's a globe, but I think that they think they're truthers, right? I think that they don't want to censor information. There was demand for it. I think that they were running B-roll footage. Didn't really know. They're not familiar with it. They were just putting stuff up. I don't hold anything against them. I believe that their software, I talked to them during the commercial break. They weren't able to just show my screen share. So I was dropping stuff in the chat for them to put up, and they did put it up. Not all of it, but it's fine. So yeah.
A feral cell image of a magnetic field. Right. All of these patterns fit perfectly within that. And then there's also this. This is the magnetic flux data of the magnetic field in the Earth. It all fits perfectly within what we see in a magnetic field. Then this is called a block domain wall. It's a plane.
Well, are you
it goes right through the middle.
I'm not sorry. I'm just not seeing the images that you're pulling up. So if we can if you can share your screen, I want to make sure we know what you're talking about exactly.
Sorry, yeah, I am sharing screen on Skype right now, but I don't know if you can see it.
All right, we'll figure that out. We have about 2 minutes to break, but we'll work that out with the crew during the break here. But what about I got some more images I want to show you again. I really just don't think that saying Earth is a Taurus field. That's not a physical description of where we are or how the world is composed or the universe is composed.
I didn't say the Earth is a Taurus field. I said it's a plane within the Taurus field because there's something called a block domain wall within the Taurus field. It's a very specific explanation and elegant model, right? I mean, of course, we don't need a model. This is also important, right? And a lot of flat earthers get mad at me when I answer the question when people ask for a model. Well, that's because, dude, I'm just gonna operate in good faith. I don't have to play this game where it's like, oh man, don't give them anything to claim that I lost. If you're coping so hard that you're looking for something I don't know or something to say that somehow the Earth's a globe, you're not ready for this truth anyway. I like to operate in good faith, but technically we don't need a model. Okay, first of all, there is no globe Earth model. There is no scientific model, right? Typically when people say, where's your flat Earth model? They mean, where's your map? Okay, there is no working map, period. Even when you navigate using the globe Earth projection, right, which typically is flattened as Mercator, but there's all kinds of distortions. They'll say because you flatten out the globe, but the globe works perfectly. No, it doesn't. We make meridian corrections with GPS, which is the distance between the longitude lines have to be corrected. We see that the distances don't match, you know, in the south when people traverse. We see that there's huge anomalies in the south. We see that GPS doesn't even work in the north completely. It has to make corrections. It's insane to think that we as flat earthers, a group of people that are censored and just popping up all around the world, should have competed with the royal families and billions of dollars and hundreds of years in the world's militaries that went and mapped out coastlines and then mapped out the earth, went south and found out that the best sailors in the world were getting lost and crashing and wrecking because they were assuming a sphere. They were assuming that the south would be symmetrical to the north. They then spent tons of money to map out a magnetic declination chart to make corrections for what happened in the south, and took them tons of time, tons of resources, and we're supposed to be able to do that when we can't even freely and privately explore past the 60th south latitude, and you can't even take commercial flights within 500 miles of the North Pole. How could we possibly give you a map? And so that's what people really mean when they say model. We don't have Earth models per se, right? We model out different phenomena. Like there's a globe Earth model for the core. It's called the geodynamo model, right? You have the globe Earth magnetic field model. It's called the geomagnetic model, right? You model out phenomena. So there is no globe Earth model. No one can point me to an actual globe Earth model. And it's certainly not a scientific model, meaning that it's you know, independently being verified with manipulation of an independent variable and isolation and control variables and actually being empirically substantiated. No one can even empirically validate an orbit where space-time bends and warps and objects free fall in a straight path, but they're actually curving at the same time and they just free fall perpetually moving around another sphere. No one can replicate that. The only way that they can even try to replicate that is on like a zero-G flight. They'll use electrostatics, ironically enough. So it's important to know that. But I'm pointing out that we – like modeling isn't bad. It's like we don't have to replace it. Falsification is independent of replacement. But also we do want to know the truth. We want to figure out where we live. And that's reasonable. I'm going to read I'll read the donations off. We'll take a break. And whenever you start looking into it, like this Taurus field quote unquote model works very well. It's the realm that we reside within. It matches a lot of the observations. Am I making definitive claims? No, because I want you guys to think about this. We are suspending belief. Okay. People are running around claiming they know things are a definitive fact when they're not. They're reification fallacies. They're affirming the consequent. They're presupposing spherical trig and then claiming that it works. They're reverse engineering a model from the sky. They're hijacking optics. They hijacked optics to push the ball so you'll take your eye off it, right? And they made the sky toxic. So the point is, we don't have to have a model, but we have a better one. Like we can make a better one. But I would never claim to know it's definitively true. You know why? Because I can't go below 7.8 miles. So why would I go the same route of someone claiming they know what's in the core 4,000 miles away? When they went down 8 miles, they were wrong the entire way. The globe Earth prediction of the layers of the Earth was wrong the entire 8 miles down. That's called the borehole in Russia, 7.8 miles. Their predictions were wrong the whole way, where it was supposed to be cold, it was hot, where it was supposed to be wet, it was dry, and vice versa. They were wrong the whole way, and they couldn't get past 8 miles with, like, I think a diamond drill bit. So we're not going to make claims we can't verify, right? They're claiming that, oh, that star is 46 billion light years away. 1 light year is 5.88 trillion miles away. They're claiming that we see a star from 46 billion times 5.88 trillion miles away. We're not going to make claims like that because we can't verify that. We can't go out there and verify it. And the only thing that would prevent me from making an incredible model would be I would have to make the assumption of sizes and distances in the medium. And if I would ever do that, and I've contemplated doing it, I go back and forth, I would have to have this huge disclaimer that these are basically plugged in values just to show you that it absolutely would work. And that's why I always bring up, look, let's just take your values for a second. Let's take the size of planets you claim. Let's take the distances you claim. Let's claim the vacuum you claim, which is physically impossible. We can still explain it. Okay, we can still explain it. And the evidence is strongly that it's more dense, right? And Edwin Hubble himself said if the Earth's in the center, then the sky, the space, would be much more dense. Everything would be much more local, much smaller, and may I add, suspiciously young. Okay, now, all that aside, I do still answer the question in good faith because I know that pattern recognition is the number one way to see through spells. I'll get off my rant here in just a second. The number one way to see through spells is pattern recognition. It's one of the most important assets you can have, right, when you're seeing truth. That's how it all works. You see the pattern of them lying about what happened in 2020. And you see, oh, man, look, they did this a few months ago in a trial run. Oh, look, the same people are making money on this. You start putting together the patterns. Pattern recognition is very important. And a truth seeker that doesn't care what other people think, when they see the pattern recognition of the torus field geometry in all of nature, small to big, they find out that this truth would free people. If we're correct, by the way, we tested it. We disproved the alternative claim. This understanding frees up everything. Now you can get to free limitless energy. Now you can freely traverse. You can find out there's plenty of land and resources. You don't have to worry about external threats of rocks falling from the sky. There's like a beautiful timepiece. Like there's a sky clock within this torus field. It's incredible. This is an incredibly important truth, right? So just so you know, all of a sudden you can unify all the scales and everything works and we could actually progress as a society. And that's very important. That's very important. And so I'm taking this time to point out to you guys, like, realize that the importance of pattern recognition. It's very important. That's how you find truth, right? And in fact, that's a crucial part of an IQ test as well. Pattern recognition is important, and most truthers have a higher level or an aptitude for pattern recognition. That's why you're in this room. That's why you've watched InfoWars. Unless you're like someone that doesn't have any and just hates on or whatever, we don't care about those people, right? But if you watch InfoWars or you have, or you're in that truther realm, you have pattern recognition more likely than not. And that's why I do address the question to show. A lot of people be like, well, you don't need a model. Why are you answering a model? We don't have a model. Falsification is independent of replacement. I'm like, yeah, I know. I coined that phrase. I know. Okay, rant over. Let me, we'll watch a little bit more until the commercial break, and then I'll read the donations.
I mean, is there a firmament? What is underneath us? Are we on a flat plane? Is there a map you can present to me that makes any sense at all? What, is Antarctica an ice wall, or is it a continent that exists? I mean, what is the actual argument saying that it's a magnetic or torus field is not, that's not actually a physical description of where we are?
Well, shouldn't we apply the same logic that we do with everything else that we look into as truthers? Do like basically our critique is that we're not a cult of thought. Mm-hmm. You're right. We all think for ourselves and we're all trying to figure out what's going on. And there was a cultish belief system presented to us that you're not allowed to question without being ridiculed. right? But like, what's beneath us? I don't know. What's beneath you on the globe? The deepest hole ever dug is 7.8 miles. No one knows what's below 8 miles. No one. And the globe model admittedly can't even explain it mathematically within their model with supercomputers. And well, what is Antarctica? You can't freely and privately explore past the 60th south latitude. We effectively live in a real life Hunger Games. Like, that's a real thing, whether you think there's a globe or not. You can't freely and privately go out there. And that's based on what our government did in 1946. They brought the Nazis over in 45, Operation Paperclip. 46, Operation High Jump. We went to Antarctica. And then we considered Antarctica our number one focus.
All right,
and
we'll,
then
be all right, we'll be right back. We'll pick it up with Antarctica on the other side. Austin Whitsitt, the debate continues in the next hour. Stay with us. All right, welcome back, folks. Again, we are on radio.
All right. And that sucks because I should have done that earlier because I knew a lot of people didn't know like the history of the globe deception. I have a actual stream called the timeline of the globe deception. I break it all down. I'll pull those scenes up here in just a second. Like I said, this may be a long one. Break it up and watch it back. We probably got a solid hour left at least. I'm going to read some of the super chats. And it's weird though, I will say, still, it's all respect. I have respect for Harrison, regardless of people trying to hate on him. I think you shouldn't be. You're minimizing the chances that we have a follow up with the moderator being disrespectful, right? But I still tip my hat to him for having me on. But it is odd, right, as an InfoWars host that you would laugh about the government not letting us privately explore Antarctica and that we basically live in a real life Hunger Games. And there's nothing funny about that. I didn't sign up to be in a Hunger Game, right? I'm a man. I would love to freely explore, certainly when I was younger. Now I have a family, right? But it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Who in the world do these people think they are that they can tell us we're not allowed to leave a circle they drew around us? And they drew a circle around the interior and the outside. That's ridiculous. And when you find out what the government did, right, in 1945, we brought Nazis over here in Operation Paperclip. It's called that because we put paperclips in different folders to pick out who we were going to bring over here, right? So what people say are war criminals. They definitely did some pretty crazy stuff. Oh, free ride, come over here. And then they got all kinds of – we won't even fall down the World War II rabbit hole. But the point is, they were obsessed with Antarctica. If you've done any research into the Nazis, they were obsessed with Antarctica and ancient civilizations. They claimed that they were much more advanced, and they wanted to reverse engineer what they did, right? And then you get into the Bell, and that comes up in a second. So they were obsessed with Antarctica. We bring Nazis over here. What does the U.S. military become obsessed with immediately? Antarctica. 1945, paperclip, bring them over here. Very next year, 1946, Operation High Jump, led by Admiral Byrd, they go and explore Antarctica. Admiral Byrd comes back onto national television, and they continue to explore Antarctica throughout the 40s. You get to like 54, Admiral Byrd, that same guy, comes on national television and says, it's astonishing to me that there's a landmass as big as the continental U.S. on the other side of the South Pole that no one knows about. With tons of lands and land and resources. He dies a few years later from heart complications. His son is found killed and left in a warehouse. Maybe a coincidence, just telling you the information. And if you fast forward to 1957, so they're constantly, you have Operation Deep Freeze after High Jump. They're just obsessed with Antarctica. We start the base Little America in Antarctica. Our government becomes obsessed with it. Our military does. Many, and also the North Pole. You get to 1957, right after he came out and said that, and you get Operation, so 1957, you get the International Geophysical Year. It's kind of off the top. It's been a while, but. When I was on tour, I was able to spew this off so fast. It was crazy. But you get the International Geophysical Year, right? And that is when major countries around the world came to an agreement that they were basically going to monitor the North Pole and the South Pole. So that was the first year that everyone kind of agreed. Now, it was like this one-year agreement, but that's when they really clamped down on it. And it's important to note that they put up a North Warning System is what it's called now. It used to be called DEW, Distant Early Warning System. I think now it was changed in 1988 to NWS, the Northern Warning System. And it's basically trip lines around the 60-65th north latitude where anyone that goes inside of that gets monitored, right? And they have stations everywhere with radar that monitor anyone that gets within that area in the north. And this all started in like 57, International Geophysical Year, and that's when they started DEW, Distant Early Warning System. Which is very interesting if you were being logical here. Now, who's on the other side? Russia. What do? They tell you Russia's our enemy. People say that's how we know the Apollo missions were true. Russia was tracking it, and the Soviet Union would have blown the whistle. Like, no, we've been working together behind the scenes for years. They both agreed to propagandize their public. Let's do a 40-year ideological war that isn't a war so we can just propagandize people into submission. And when you find out about Flat Earth, you find out that there's international cooperation across the board. But to not digress too much, you have 1957 International Geophysical Year, and then, and I'm always maybe get these mixed up, but you have 1958, the foundation of NASA. So they go to the South, they start exploring, they get obsessed with it. Then they come and they say, okay, let's get all the major countries to agree, including Russia. Like, look, we're going to monitor the North and the South. They create a trip line around the North to monitor it, and they monitor anyone that's going South. So you have to stay within those two boundaries, like around the 60th North and South latitudes. I think it's 65 North, 60th South. That's crazy on its face, bro. That's crazy on its face. You should be on our team just for that point alone. We should be in agreement that that's just unacceptable. So then the very next year, they say, don't worry, guys, we're going to subtly, you know, tell you where you're allowed to go on the Earth, but don't worry, look at the sky. We're going to tell you what's going on in the universe, right? Foundation of NASA, the very next year. What do the very next year after that in 1958? They signed the, or 1959, they signed the Antarctic Treaty, which says, of course, it forbids private, free and private exploration, and then they have the cover of it's to save the environment and blah, blah, blah. Anyone denying that you can't just freely and privately explore Antarctica is being disingenuous. Okay, so that's an interesting timeline, right? 45, Operation Paperclip, Operation High Jump, we go explore Antarctica. Then we get into like, it's like 48, maybe 52, I don't remember, Operation Deep Freeze. Then we have 54, Admiral Byrd comes back and says, look, there's more land over there, it's wild, that no one knows and no one cares. Then he dies. We get into 1957, International Geophysical Year, they set up the boundaries. 1958, they found NASA. 1959, signed the Antarctic Treaty. 1962, they do Operation Fishbowl. Right. And that's a part of the bigger operation, which is called Operation Dominique, which I believe is Latin for Lord. So it's literally Operation Fishbowl of the Lord is literally the name of the operation. And what are they doing? They're shooting up high altitude missiles. Why are you shooting up high altitude missiles? And why would you call your operation Fishbowl? Right. Well, people speculate that they were trying to see how high you could actually get within the containment, within the firmament. So they're shooting up high-altitude missiles, cover stories out there testing, like nuclear weapons or whatever. Okay, so then you fast forward, you get a bunch of crazy stuff happening. We won't cover it all, but like I think the same year, you have JFK saying, we're going to go to the moon in 8 years. And miraculously, we went on the eighth year after they took him out. And we know about that, right? We were lied to about that. So that's just a bit of what happened. There's way more to it, right? You have like NACA, the predecessor to NASA. You have all of the intel agencies being founded right around this time. The NSA, the FBI, the CIA, all being founded right around this time. They clamped down on everything. Once they explored the Earth, they came and told you you're not allowed to, and they started making all kinds of intel agencies and treaties and saying and creating NASA to tell you all kinds of stories, started testing the firmament, seeing how far out you could go everywhere. It is crazy what they did. Dude, then they clearly landed on the moon and saw the Earth was a sphere that closes it forever, right? And the Apollo missions were a lie. This is an insane story. If you don't know that, if you haven't researched that, you cannot assess flat Earth, okay? All right, that was an important rant. I wanted to do that on InfoWars. I wanted to break all that down, but that's why I started to do it right there, even though it was a bit diverted a little bit, but I wasn't able to do it. And we'll do it when we get back, and then, of course, we didn't. So let me read the donations.
Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this Truth Jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at